The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
So on our panel this Sunday to discuss that and lots more, we're joined by Stephen Kinsella, Senior Lecturer in Economics at the University of Limerick, Gerry Howland, the Public Affairs Consultant and Columnist with the Irish Examiner, Alison O'Reilly of the Irish Mail on Sunday, who's been so instrumental in reporting on the Tuam Babies story, Leo Varadkar, the Minister for Transport, Tourism and Sport, and also said Stephen Donnelly, Independent TD, who's making the headlines today. So we'll start with you, Stephen. As you're the man in the news, why are you resigning?
I'm resigning because I think the actions of the Taoiseach over the last week no longer make it credible that this banking inquiry, which is much needed, can be an independent inquiry of the Oireachtas and is an inquiry that the public can trust. So a few weeks ago when the Taoiseach announced the inquiry, he made a very politicised attack on Fianna Fáil, an understandable one, but he was definitely making the point that Fianna Fáil were very involved in the banking crisis. The Taoiseach stood up and made a much more pointed, deliberate attack. Last week, due process of the Oireachtas was followed. The Labour senators didn't show up for their own selection hearing. They lost the vote. And to me, that's the end of that. The Oireachtas has decided if you don't show up for your own vote, if you don't show up for your selection committee, regardless of why, you don't get elected. So what did the Taoiseach do? The Taoiseach said, well, that doesn't work for me. I want a majority. I insist on having a majority. So I'm going to subvert the due process. I'm going to subvert the will of the Oireachtas. I'm going to enforce a majority. And then he went further. Then in the chamber on Tuesday, when questioned as to whether he was going to do it and why he was going to do it, he said he was going to do it to ensure that he knew what the members of the inquiry would do, to make sure he was happy with the terms of reference. And indeed, he even referenced the final report. And he wasn't ambiguous in any way. Then myself and Micheál Martin kind of said back to him, it's up to the inquiry to set the terms of reference. And the Taoiseach is on the record as saying, no, it's up to the government members of the inquiry to set the terms of reference. So I have a choice. I can either tacitly accept that the will of Parliament has been completely overridden by the Taoiseach, who doesn't like the answer that it gave him, and try and do the best by the inquiry anyway, or I can make a stand and say, I'm sorry, I'm not willing to partake in this. You are treating democracy in a cavalier manner. You have explicitly stated that you are going to control the inquiry. I mean, there's government majorities on every committee. I'm on the Finance Committee. It has a government majority. That's not a problem. That reflects the will of the people in the last election. But when the Taoiseach overrides the will of the Oireachtas, subverts the democratic process, and then explicitly states he is doing so in order to control the banking inquiry, my decision taken late Friday was to say, no, I cannot be a part of this. I'm going to stand up and I'm going to say, I'm sorry. I don't believe this is how politics should be done. I believe you have completely undermined the inquiry. I think he has completely undermined Ciarán Lynch, who's an excellent Labour TD and an excellent chair of the Finance Committee. Ciarán chairing the banking inquiry is one of the reasons I thought it had hope of being independent. But unfortunately, the Taoiseach's will trumps his will. So that's why.
Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach's will trumping here?
Yeah, no, not at all. Like you'd swear from the way Stephen is talking that the Taoiseach was actually going to be on the banking inquiry himself. Like that's not the case at all. The banking inquiry will go ahead. It is important that we have a banking inquiry. We've had a number of inquiries already into...
Why, if it's just a party political exercise?
Well, it's not. I'll tell you why it's important that we have it. It's important that we have it because the inquiries that have happened to date have been in private. This is a parliamentary inquiry. It'll be held in public, which means that regulators, bankers, senior civil servants, senior politicians, all the people who made decisions in and around the bailout and the banking collapse will be questioned in public, and people will see them being held to account and have to explain their actions. And that's why I think it's very important that it does go ahead.
Just to cut across you there, you say it'll be in public. In theory, it's going to be in public, but a lot of people saying, in fact, that's never going to happen. What with legal challenges and all the rest?
Well, every parliamentary inquiry that I've ever seen happen has happened in public. They may have procedural meetings in private, but similar to the way the PAC works, which of course has a government majority on it, but is not controlled by the government, works, it'll work in that way. But, you know, it's important to recall what actually happened in the Senate. You know, what's supposed to happen, and everyone agreed to this, is that any Oireachtas committee, and it's been the case since 1922, reflects the composition of the Dáil and Seanad. So say, for example, 20% of the people in the Dáil are Labour, they get roughly 20% of the seats on the committee or the inquiry. That's the way it works. That is how democracy works and how it should work. What happened was that there were supposed to be two members from the Senate, one government and one non-government. Some of the Labour members didn't turn up, and Fianna Fáil essentially...
And the government lost a vote, and now it repealed the vote to put two extra people on because it couldn't win the vote the first time.
What happened is that Fianna Fáil took advantage of that situation and got both of the Senate seats for the opposition. Now, can you imagine if that had happened the other way around? Can you imagine if the shoe had been on the other foot?
Yeah, but isn't this a case of Fine Gael
taken both of the seats?
Okay, but isn't this a case of Fine Gael now saying, look, Fianna Fáil, we're only doing what Fianna Fáil would have done before. I thought you guys the last election saying everything would be different. Howland, do you want to
Well, that's not the point that I said at all. What I'm saying here is that it was always intended that the Oireachtas inquiry would reflect the composition of the Dáil and Seanad on a procedural vote, because some people didn't turn up. Fianna Fáil managed to grab two seats out of two for the opposition. Can you imagine the controversy now had the shoe been on the other foot and had Fine Gael and Labour grabbed those seats for themselves? But, you know, I actually don't think that it's absolutely essential to argue over whether there's nine members
or
11.
Jerry, you know? Will it not be a poorer inquiry without Stephen?
I think it will, and I think that's actually the most important point, and it's the one thing that I really wanted to say, because I'm actually very sorry to hear that Stephen isn't taking part in the banking inquiry. I remember his campaign 3 years ago when he ran for the Dáil. He spoke eloquently about the bailout, about banking, about all of those things. He's exactly the kind of person who should be on the inquiry, who should be there to ask the hard questions and to unpick what went on there. And I'm really disappointed. You know, speaking as a citizen rather than a government minister, I actually feel a bit let down, because when Stephen was elected 3 or 4 years ago, he was elected by the people of Wicklow and East Carlow to do exactly this kind of work. And instead, he's decided to pull out of it. And I think that's really letting down his electorate, quite frankly.
Well, Oireachtas, can I respond to that? Because, you know, fair enough if what I had done was arbitrarily stepped down, right? When the membership for the committee came up, I spoke to a bunch of TDs in the Dáil who said, you would be out of your mind to go on to this inquiry. We're coming up to an election. You're going to be buried in a basement 4 days a week for the next year. And all of your political opponents will be knocking on the doors of your voter saying, don't mind Donnelly, he's in a basement, vote for me, right?
But heard what Leo said. This is what you got elected for. This is what you got campaigned on.
Well, I'm in the middle of responding
to that. So the advice I got from everybody was, don't do the inquiry because it will not be in your political interest to do it. I took the opposite decision. I said, I got into this. I gave up a good job that I loved in the private sector to run for the Dáil to try and help. Right. And I said, do I serve my country better by being on an independent banking inquiry where we can say what we want, we can interview who we want, we can look at what events we want, we can call whatever documents we want.
But the extra senators on the committee wouldn't have changed any of that, would they?
Of course they will. Of course they will. So why, having chosen to go on it for exactly the reasons that Leo has said, did I choose to come off it? Because the Taoiseach has said, we, the government, must have a majority on this inquiry. And the reason I am overturning due process in Parliament is because I want to control the terms of reference. Now, what that means, the terms of reference mean, let's say I go on to the inquiry and say, well, I want the inquiry to call Michael Noonan and Enda Kenny. Leo has said, well, the Taoiseach isn't on the committee. Well, he is, because he's got six people on the committee who he has explicitly stated.
So are you saying they would be coming into the committee with riding instructions and that would be the way they would vote and that they would not have any choice in the matter?
I'm not saying that. Enda Kenny is saying that. Enda Kenny has stated on the record that he will be using the government majority. He stated, quote, it is up to the government members of the inquiry to set the terms of reference. Now, do you think he's not telling the government members what those terms of reference are? Of course he did. So I can assure the minister that I too am disappointed. But we've got a choice here. So I can say, I'm going to stay on this. I'm going to ignore the fact that we have a Taoiseach deciding what the inquiry is going to do, say, and look at. Or I can make a stand and say, I'm sorry, but this is not good enough. And that's what I've done.
Can I ask you a question, Stephen? I think this is an important question. You've spoken about Ciarán Lynch there, who's going to be the independent chairman of the committee. I agree with what you said. He's an excellent TD. He's been a very good and impartial chairman of previous committees, and that's one of the reasons why you said you'd serve. You know, did you seek to speak to him? Did you ask him to give you any guarantees on the terms of reference or the impartiality? Did you even inform him that you're resigning from the committee?
I did inform him, and he said he was disappointed. Kieran Lynch and I have an excellent working relationship. Yeah. But Leo, Kieran Lynch is not the Taoiseach. If the Taoiseach says...
No, he's the chairman of the committee.
If the Taoiseach, if the Taoiseach says no, but that I government actually, members are going to control the terms of reference,
I spoke to Kieran Lynch
that's
going to
happen.
What happened last night was Stephen contacted Kieran Lynch by text message after 8 o'clock last night to say he was quitting the inquiry. At that stage, he'd already arranged to be in this programme. He'd already submitted
actually,
his articles.
Actually, we'd invited him on Friday.
He'd already submitted his articles to Sunday Independent and had already briefed the media.
Like, but we didn't know anything about Stephen resigning, actually, when he came on the programme.
Yeah, it's not
when
the way.
We invited him on the programme.
For someone who I genuinely believed was elected 3.5 years ago to be a different sort of politician, it really is.
This is a different sort of politician.
Gerry Howlett and then Stephen Kinsella.
Well, I think there are two underlying issues here. One is that it is very important. There is a banking inquiry. It was the cataclysmic event, economically speaking, at least in the history of the state, bar none. And the consequences of those events continue very unpleasantly and sometimes horribly for lots of people. So there's a huge underlying issue at stake.
Do you think at this time, at this stage, this far out, particularly after this kind of row, that's going to happen?
No, and certainly not satisfactorily. And this goes to the second underlying issue. We, the people, formed a view in relation to the referendum on to enhance the powers of Oireachtas committees that we were not happy to give those enhanced powers to parliamentarians to sit in judgment, to make judgments about people, potentially reputation in damaging ways. It's a little more complicated than that, I do acknowledge, but that fundamentally was a judgment made by a majority of the people then. And I think listening and looking to the events unfold over the last week, I think most people would feel that that judgment is strongly reinforced.
So you can't trust the politicians with this kind of inquiry. It will always be part of
the political. In an atmosphere where there is a pre-existing distrust of the political establishment and of politicians, I think that distrust is reinforced over the past week and indeed listening to this conversation again in the last few minutes. I don't think there is a great faith that in the very contentious atmosphere of political argument and contention in Leinster House that an impartial outcome can be arrived at over anything that is politically sensitive. And you look at what's happening in and around the Public Accounts Committee in parallel to this, where everything is a political ping pong. Now, none of this is new, by the way. None of this can be ascribed to the door of this government. Shock, horror, aren't they awful? But I suppose the accusation that can be made to this government is that they promised to be radically different in terms of the tone and tenor that they would bring to politics, the new politics that was promised, that would, based on their correct analysis, that one of the fundamental reasons that we had an economic collapse, that we had a banking crisis, was there was a style and a sort of politics that ultimately disastrously let us down. But it is a style and sort of politics that is actually now being continued.
Stephen Kinsella, cast your cold economist's eye over all of this then.
Well, it's not that cold. Only, but I suppose beyond the political wrangling, which has been unfortunate, to put it mildly, And I think Stephen's loss on the committee is a real blow to the credibility of the committee. The Dáil is made up of generalists in many spheres, but Stephen's expertise would have been really welcome on the committee. The reason that you want a banking inquiry, a public one, there have been three big reports done in the past on this, maybe 10 books written on it, is that you want the public to hear the people involved give an account of their movements, effectively, give an account of where they came from, and perhaps get some more detail into the public domain about this for scholars, if anything else. But I think what's happened now is that any of the findings that the banking inquiry actually makes are going to be interpreted in a political light, So, for example, if they find there was widespread malfeasance on the part of the ministers in the Fianna Fáil Green government, let's just say they do, for the sake of argument, that's going to be thrown back in their face and say, no, this is completely political. There's no reason for you to make this. In fact, you're slanting the
terms. So is it valueless before it starts?
It certainly colours the type of exercise that it was intended to be, which is to discover what exactly went on in the round, to kind of get a sense of how this all came together. And the worry would be that by excessively slanting the terms of reference, or perhaps even, and now obviously changing the composition of the committee, what is found will, and how it is interpreted, will be different. And as an economist, what you want to see are the numbers, the facts coming out of these inquiries. But it's who chooses those facts and who chooses where they come from that will ultimately determine the character and the kind of tone of the final report as it's issued. And that's where the value may be lost, in my opinion.
Stephen, if you've resigned from, and there's calls coming in, very pro and anti, each of you on either side. Some people saying, Stephen, you're making a big deal and making a martyr out of yourself. Other people saying, well done, Stephen, and shame on you. And some people saying, Leo, you've the respect of a lot of people. Don't damage it. Don't try and defend what Kenny did. And generally, Minister Leo Varadkar's gut response to an issue is in line with the public's feeling. On this one, he is wrong. So there's, you know, people taking up views either way. But if, you know, it was the we all remember you coming into politics, as Leo said, even from the point of view of being in a different party. He was impressed watching your campaign.
I think that might have been to
were you wasting your time?
A political point in his next sentence.
Well, were you wasting your time? If you ran on the basis of the banking crisis... And now you had a chance to be on this committee, which was always going to have a government majority anyway. You've taken yourself off the committee now, so you can't have any impact, good, bad or indifferent, on it. So have you wasted the past 3 years?
Well, no, not at all. They're two very different things, right? So am I glad I ran? Have I tried to affect change? Have I influenced legislation, done things in the finance committee, mortgage crisis and so forth? Of course I have. There's a completely separate question, which was it the right thing to do on the basis that this is core to why I ran to step back from the committee? And I can repeat my reason for doing that. It is not in my interests to do so. Right. Because you open yourself up to all sorts of accusations and you disappoint people. I went on to the committee for exactly the reasons that you and Minister Varadkar have said, because I think I would have had something to give to it. I think I would have helped hold people to account. I have a good working relationship with many people on the committee. But Enda Kenny threw all of that in the bin when he stood up and said, I am subverting the democratic process to ensure I have a majority so that I can control the terms of reference, the final report. And he said, he's on the record, this is not hearsay. He said, if I don't have a majority, if the government doesn't have a majority, how would I know what the members of the committee might do? Now, I have been a professional consultant, and before that I was an engineer. And in either of those two jobs, if someone came along and said, look, I want you to do a piece of work, I want you to get involved in this, but by the way, I will veto anything I want to veto. I'll have people sitting over your shoulder who'll say, sorry, you can't look at this, you can't look at that, you can't ask that question, you can't look at this piece of information. I, and anyone from that world, I'm sure Stephen Kinsella as an academic, would say, I'm sorry, but they are not rules of engagement that I believe I can bring any value to. And therefore, I've made the decision I've made, rather than be complicit in what is going on, to say, I'm sorry, but this kind of politics has to stop.
Leo Varadkar, imagine if Enda Kenny had done the opposite. Imagine after losing that vote in the Senate and Mark McSharry and Sean Barrett getting their places on the committee. Imagine if Enda had said, you know, all the usual things about Fianna Fáil. And if we were Fianna Fáil, sure, we'd be forcing a majority and putting our people on that. But imagine if he'd said instead, we're not going to do that because we promise new politics and we believe in the banking inquiry and we trust people like Stephen Donnelly and it can go ahead and set its own terms of reference. Wouldn't all the newspapers today, instead of being critical of the government, be praising the government for, if not being able to deliver any kind of economic kickback to the people after the last election, at least being able to deliver something of new politics?
Well, look, first of all, I don't remember the last time that the papers weren't tossed out of the government. And you mentioned there the government not delivering on the
economy.
But
imagine, are we daft to imagine new politics?
Well, you mentioned the economy and you kind of...
I asked you a question. Don't tell me, you've done so much good work on the economy
you suggested that we hadn't. You know, that there are 70,000 more people at work today than there were a few years ago.
But your own ministers have been out saying it's time to give more back. So that's what I was referring. Anyhow, let's park that and answer the question.
The suggestion you made was a political charge that we hadn't delivered on the economy. Actually, we've done, we've almost balanced the books. The national debt is starting to fall. There are 70,000 more people at work.
We all know it, and we'll take it as read, and I'm sure the audience does. As you well pointed out, it never appears in the papers. Were we daft to imagine new politics? Could Enda Kenny have turned around and said that in the real world?
But look at the example of the kind of new politics that we do have. We've introduced an effective ban on corporate donations, the thing that came out of every tribunal forever. That's done. There's now quotas to bring more women into politics. That's a big change. We're passing legislation at the moment to regulate lobbying, to protect whistleblowers. All that stuff is being done. And one of the things we promised...
Not a box ticking. How much is actually changing in attitudes?
Stuff.
Because, for instance, even on whistleblowers, there are whistleblowers who are out there, and we all know about them, who would say a lot hasn't changed for them yet.
I'll give you three obvious examples. One thing we did promise as part of new politics is that there would be parliamentary inquiries. What is being established is, as promised, a parliamentary inquiry into the banking collapse. But just to give you an example of something that happened this week in the Dáil, on the issue of the mother and baby homes, Sinn Féin put down a motion on that, raised the issue. Charlie Flanagan, the new Minister for Children, contacted the opposition members, and they were able to agree a motion without a vote. You know, that's a good example of something that didn't happen very often under the previous regime, of the parties coming around on an all-party basis and agreeing something without a vote and depoliticising and making sure an issue didn't become particularly political. When I was in the Senate this week, I was in the Senate on a bill relating to aviation, state airports and Shannon. I accepted amendments from Dara O'Brien of Fianna Fáil, and Sean Barrett, who's an independent. That never happened in the last Dáil. Never, ever did the government ever accept opposition amendments. We accept opposition bills and private members' bills. I've accepted, I think, three private members' bills at this stage, one from Timmy Dooley, one from Tony Lawler, and a different one through statutory instrument, but through Owen Murphy. That was never done before. TDs, ministers have to turn up for their German debates. TDs have to turn up for their questions. You know, none of these things were ever done before. Like, I know we're only halfway there in political reform, but to say that hasn't happened is just not true.
Stephen?
I think that if Leo were Taoiseach, maybe he will be someday, who knows, I think he probably would have left the 5-4, the four government members alone. My sense after 3 years in the Dáil is that the real groupings within the Dáil don't follow the party jerseys all that closely. I think if you told everyone to take off their party jerseys and get into the corners with people who they most closely associate with, then you'd see a very different composition in the Dáil. And Leo is relatively young. So one of the great things about being a TD is I'm about to turn 40 and still get described as young. But, you know, Leo's a new TD, I think probably from a different Ireland. But the old guard are very much still in control. Has this government done things on political reform? Yes, it has. It has done things on political reform. It has changed some of the rules. Leo said he's accepted various amendments. I don't think I've ever had an amendment to a piece of legislation accepted by the two ministers who I deal with, which are ministers Noonan and Howlin. So it depends very much on the minister. But, you know, there is that phrase that culture eats rules for breakfast or whatever, what culture eats procedure for breakfast, whatever it is. This is a great example. The procedure was we'll set up inquiries legislation. We did. Great. But then the culture arrived and said, well, we're going to subvert it to make sure that it's not really an Oireachtas inquiry. It's an Enda Kenny inquiry. And that's what's happened. So I would take Leo at good faith. I'm not convinced that he nor many members of the Dáil, including myself, would have done what the Taoiseach has done. I think they would have said, look, we screwed up quite badly. Two of our people didn't show up to the vote. We lost the vote. That's our tough luck. We control everything else. And the thing is, on the inquiry, one of the things I was writing in the paper today is I actually thought that the unintended composition of the inquiry was much stronger because the government had four seats. Fianna Fáil had two, Sinn Féin had one, and then Sean Barrett and myself as two independents who are neither pro nor anti-government had the other two. So the nine people on the committee would have had to have worked very tightly together with consensus. The public would have known that. So I would take Leo at his word, but the current government, the current Taoiseach, did what he did. And I don't think we as members of Parliament should stand over that and be complicit in it.
Stephen Kinsler, Cliff Taylor is making the point today that we do know, because of the various reports we've had already, we do know a fair bit about what went wrong. And you said, you know, there's also a plethora of books and all the rest. But one thing even this inquiry was never going to be able to tell us, because the ECB won't let us find out, is exactly what level of bullying did go on from the ECB, not just to this government, but to the previous government, to both governments, in fact, over the fact that we just had to bail out the bondholders, which has been the big political question in this country for the past couple of years.
Yeah, the ECB is the dark horse in much of the speculation, particularly around the, you know, the banking guarantee, all the months coming up to it. One of the things I really hoped that the bank, and I've been writing about this for years now, is that the bank inquiry would really stretch back, you know, further, maybe even to the late 90s. To really see where the roots of this thing came. I think it's understandable that the public think that the crisis really happened, you know, sort of mid September 2007, 2008. You know, that's not true. The truth about it is it comes from a cumulative series of events, and I think the public's understanding of what happened is actually quite deep. You know, when you have your 91-year-old grandmother asking about bondholders, you know, it is sort of, and that's not just because I'm an economist, but that does happen. You know, the public are very well educated on economic issues at this point. What we would gain, I think, from this is we could almost perceive the influence of the ECB as a residual. We can see everything else happening, and what's not there must be the ECB. So I think we'll absorb that, I think, through the process of the banking inquiry, as flawed as I think it may be now.
Alison, we've only heard from the men on this so far. What's your take on it all?
I'm just happy that there's an inquiry underway. You know, I think it's very important no matter what. It is disappointing, obviously, that Stephen has left, but it has to move forward, and we have to get to the bottom of what happened and have the full facts and establish this inquiry and see where we go from here. But it's just really important that it continues, and that there's going to be a lot of knocks along the way, you know, a lot of people on either side, but we need to know what happened. We need to know what caused all these problems, and we need a full report into the whole thing.
Just you mentioned the question earlier, Gerry Howlin, about the Public Accounts Committee. And of course, we had the Taoiseach accusing John McGuinness, the chairman of the Public Accounts Committee, for politicising that one when he called this week for the resignation of the health chiefs, the civil servants, Ambrose McLaughlin and Tony O'Brien, the head of the HSE. Isn't PAC, and those calls for the resignation, and also the very long hearing that was given to Angela Curran's, which she was in, I think went on for 6.5, nearly 7 hours.
Nearly seven with short, very short breaks, I think.
So, I mean, you were saying the point earlier, people will just see that, you know, politicians can't be trusted with committees like this. Is there any prospect of a banker coming in and answering all the questions, for instance, that people want out there without, you know, getting a lot of legal advice and maybe the whole thing becoming impossible?
No, I would imagine a lot of these people are going to be legaled up to the eyeballs before they go in anywhere.
As is their right.
As is their absolute right, of course, because their reputation is at stake, which goes back, of course, to the original referendum and the debate around that, and whether, in fact, it is appropriate that the body politic should make judgments of this kind. In relation to the banking inquiry, I'm certainly sorry Stephen is gone. I think it's damaged, but it is very important. It is going to go ahead now as it is. That's just the reality. It'd be interesting to see if anyone else or any other party on it considers their position in the week or weeks ahead. But, you know, it's diminished. And there's also the point that, of course, will it be concluded between now and the next election? There's a whole other sort of political dynamic unfolding. We don't know how long this doll is going to run for. And if it's not concluded before this doll is concluded, then of course it goes into the wastepaper.
And then Stephen Donnelly could have a chance to get back on it if he were a TD.
Well,
Stephen
could be the majority on it the next time round. But be aware that politics could outpace the pace of the inquiry, and it could all end nowhere.
Stephen Kinsley, you wanted to come in for a final point on this.
There's a point about legal representation. In previous commissions of investigation and the reports that were produced by Nyberg and Regling and Watson and by Professor Honan, who's the governor of the central bank, anybody that was called in front of the commission of investigation in particular had the right of legal representation. So they were sitting there with their solicitor giving, evidence to Nyberg or any of the people working with him. So I think the core difference, I think almost everybody who went into that process had legal representation. So I think the difference is that these will be or may be conducted in public. And that really is the only difference. It's not that people, you know, rocked up and sort of poured their heart out immediately. That's not really happened the last time either.
I'm going to take a break now in a minute. Is it true, by the way, Stephen Donnelly, seeing as how you mentioned being a young TD at the age of 40, is it true you're 10 years in politics?
39.
Leopold.
39. I'm not there yet.
You're not there yet. You're only at 40.
Cheers, Stephen.
Leo Varadkar, I won't ask you whether you're over 40, but you're a young politician, aren't you? 10 years in the game.
I was first elected to the council on June 11th, 2004. Yeah, so.
Well, that's congratulations to you on your 10-year anniversary.
A wasted youth, but I still have my middle age. So.
And congratulations to Stephen on Father's Day. You like being a dad after 7 o'clock in the morning, is that right?
That's my Twitter. I love. Yes, I do. Yeah, I have a 4 and a 5-year-old who brought me breakfast in bed this morning and then sat in beside me and ate most of it. I've, please God, another on the way.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Lovely.
Well, hopefully, please God.
Congratulations.
Yeah, yeah.
Hope all that goes well. Thank you very much. Something to celebrate. And
yes,
with that,
is.
We'll take a break. Welcome back. Áine Lawlor here on the Marian Finucane Show. Our panel in studio, Stephen Donnelly, Independent TD, Leo Varadkar, Minister for Transport, Tourism and Sport, Alison O'Reilly of the Irish Mail on Sunday, Gerry Howland, Public Affairs Consultant and Economics Lecturer, Stephen Kinsley. Alison O'Reilly, you published today in the Irish Mail on Sunday the full list of the dead children and the causes of death.
That's right, yeah.
From the Tuam mother and baby home. This is, of course, 3 weeks since you broke the story of Catherine Corliss's research, and this week we heard the inquiry at last.
Yes, at last, yeah. It's just been a phenomenal story, and I think it really boils down to Catherine Corliss and the extensive work that she had done in relation to researching the names of these children and their causes of death and everything that she could gather. She had published details about it in the Old Tuam Society Journal in 2012, and nothing became of it. And I was actually looking into the family of Bridget Dolan, who had two boys in the Tuam home. She had John Desmond and William Joseph, and the sister of these two boys was looking for one of them, William Joseph, because she has there's death records in the home itself that confirm that John Desmond is dead and that William Joseph is dead. However, there's no death cert for William Joseph in the National Registry. So that's obviously left her feeling quite confused about, you know, where is this boy? And obviously she does understand that it could simply be bad record keeping, because we know from looking at the reports that the nuns hadn't registered a lot of the children's. I think they hadn't registered 10 in 1 year. So it's quite possible that he is buried there on the grounds. But she did also hear from talk through family down through the years, this little fella could have gone off to America as well. And he was born in the 1950s before the Adoption Act was implemented. So there'd be little or no record keeping in relation to that. And there were a lot of reports in the Tuam Herald and the Connacht Tribune over the years about the adoptions. So I was obviously talking to her, and then we spoke about the 796 children, and I went to talk to Catherine about it, and I looked at her work, and I just was totally blown away, because I mean, government ministers and all the adoption rights groups and all that would have known about, you know, these mass graves around the country and the likes of Bessborough and the likes of Sean Ross Abbey and the Dunboyne mother and baby home. And it was the same procedure in most of these homes. There was poor record keeping and these children were buried and there was no burial records for any of them. But I think what tipped things over was Catherine Corliss's work, that she had obviously cross-checked these death certs with the burial records, and there seemed to be no burial records for any of these children, bar one, who was buried in the Tuam main cemetery there. And, you know, most of the children that had gone into that home had come from Galway and Mayo. So she was able to cross-check the cemeteries there, and there's just no record of them. And then the septic tank story came into it, and from plans that she had of the grounds there, it looked like the children were buried in there. But as she said herself recently, like, we can't prove that, but it doesn't matter if there's one child in there or 796.
There's been some criticism that, it turns out, in fact, there's no way that 800 would have fitted, and given what happened to the site and various records that exist over the years. So, I mean, in some ways, the big international focus when this story was picked up internationally was this 800 skeletons thrown into it, dumped in a septic tank. Yeah. And there's been criticism of that. What do you think of that criticism of those that sensationalist aspect? Is that what helped it take off?
It's just totally, I think it's totally unfair to begin with. The story here is that there's 796 children who died in that home between 1925 and 1961. It doesn't really matter where they're buried. There's no records of them. So, you have eyewitnesses of children and Mary Moriarty, who came out during the week to say that she saw these skeletons, in this ground.
A number of.
I mean, there's never been a proper investigation into this to know exactly where these children are buried. And I think it actually makes it worse if they're not all together and we don't know where they are, because if they're not in the septic tank, they're lost. And it doesn't matter if it's one child, it's not okay.
Gerry Howland, I mean, Alison, listening to you there, saying very definitely as a young woman, it's not okay. And as someone who's seen the way Ireland has changed, and it's been very recent, the change that happened. Mother and baby homes, county home, none of these things were secret.
No.
The fact that babies disappeared and nobody ever spoke about them again, none of these things were secret. Suddenly now, it's like the last untold scandal that we're finally facing up to. What has changed?
Well, I'm not sure a lot has changed, and I don't accept it's necessarily an untold scandal. I think the way we're telling the story to ourselves is almost a bit of a scandal. Psychiatric institutions, Magdalen laundries, industrial schools, mother and baby homes were enormous buildings. They were in plain sight for decades. There was a knowledge of what was going on in these places to a degree. Joe Duffy has a very interesting column in the Mail on Sunday today, talking about, for example, Eileen Flynn, the school teacher in New Ross, who was asked to leave when pregnant in 1982, which was just months before we, the Irish people, voted by a 2/3 majority for that pro-life referendum in 1983 to ensure when, after the mother and baby homes had largely closed, when the nuns were effectively beginning to fade from the scene, that there couldn't be any termination of pregnancy here in Ireland. He also talks about a young woman now living in Seattle called Shan Cullen, who she's 42 now, but she was drummed out of secondary school as a teenager when she was pregnant. So all of that then has a continuum much more recently than we are comfortable with or prepared even now to talk frankly about. I think Alison deserves enormous credit, and the other journalists working on the stories and bringing all the detail out, and Catherine Corliss in Hume. But if we tell ourselves that we know all this now because of Alison and Catherine Corliss and so forth, I think we're telling ourselves a lie, because I think we knew an awful lot more, an awful lot longer than we're letting on. And I think there is a fundamental inherent deceit in the narrative about how this has been played out over the last few weeks. And, in a sense, if you look at, for example, the whole Savita Hapavanavar issue and how that played out, whether we would or would not have a referendum again, the whole issue of fertility, of pregnancy, of women, of control is alive. And we have never properly addressed any of those issues as a society since. So it's very much now, it's very much current, and the threads of all that continue.
Stephen Kinsley, you want to come in there?
I agree. I mean, it's obviously not my area, but I agree entirely with what Gerry's saying. I think we're hunting for a narrative here. You can feel it. The conversation keeps shifting. Was it a septic tank? Wasn't it? Oh, and the worry I would have is that we establish a narrative too quickly and it suddenly becomes, the nuns were horrible. This kind of thing. And I think that's wrong. I think What we need
and
to
do. And it wasn't just the Catholic Church.
No,
there were the Bethany
not.
Homes, of
and,
course,
and,
as well.
And you know, there were workhouses and there were county homes and
there were families who sent their daughters away.
Yes, of course. And the state funded some of these areas through local rates, which is, and we have data on that. I think that in many inquiries, you want to hear from the people who survived this process first. But actually, in this case, I think we need to find a way to establish the precise rates of mortality by time, by precise age of child, and by cause of death in each of the institutions in a validated way. That's quite difficult to do. That's not something that you can do, you know, with burial records. You can include the mother and baby homes, but you also have to include other institutions that house infants.
With the Magdalene and all
but
the
you
rest,
see,
yeah.
that's the issue. There have been comparisons to the mortality rates in individual years in places like Northern Ireland or Scotland, and that may not be the right way. There's a lot of expertise on the ground. Economic historians like Cormac O'Groda and Liam Delaney are there and able to do this kind of work if they get the data in the right way. And that would give us a really, really firm basis to understand where the causes of death are coming from, because you're already hearing about this, you know, the overcrowding story is coming out. And that's kind of anecdotal in a way, right? And it may be true.
And it may have contributed to the epidemics.
Of course.
And, or there appears to have been measles epidemics.
Yes, you have to remember as well that, you know, these homes were receiving funding for these children.
Absolutely.
And of course they were all on top of each other, but... You know, where was, you know, why were they suffering with malnutrition when there was money given to provide for each one of these children? And I fully agree with the point that, you know, this was known for years. This was absolutely known for years about all these homes. Whatever it was about this story, it went global and then it lifted the lid on absolutely everything. So I'm thrilled about that.
But is it that we were embarrassed into doing something at last?
I think once it appeared in the Washington Post, all of a sudden the government wanted to talk about it and launch an inquiry and everything, but they had known about this for years. My 94-year-old granny knew about it, you know, and she used to talk to me all the time about all these poor girls in the Magdalene laundries. And you know, she was a woman with 13 children. She never ended up in the Magdalene laundries because her mother wouldn't allow it to happen, you know, and her husband had died quite young. And it was a problem within society. It was a problem within society. Everybody knew. I mean, I'm not blaming the nuns and, you know, for all of this. And, but of course, they do have an awful lot to answer for. But families knew about this too, and families were putting their children into these homes. And there were a lot of families that I have spoken to over the last few weeks, you know, that refused to put their children into homes because they just felt that they could do a better job at home. So I don't accept, you know, that we need
but
to.
But it's also clear from some of those stories, isn't it, how much courage it took to stand up sometimes to
it
the
did.
Local parish
it
priest.
Did.
Or even to the neighbours that in family, there was one story on Liveline, I think, and it was the neighbours who complained and wouldn't let the parents keep the child.
The respectable woman down the road, Karen. Yeah, who was supposed to determine what everyone else on the street did, yeah.
It was just an awful lot.
But this brings
story.
Us back to the question of what an inquiry can achieve then, because, I know, you know, the state, of course, you know, did play a huge role, huge role. Families played a huge role, social norms and all the rest. But does that lead you to a situation where if everyone is to blame, therefore no one's to blame because we're all to blame, or do we go and drag some elderly nuns out of nursing homes and see what they can remember?
It just wasn't okay. None of this was okay, regardless.
But what do
of
we do now, I suppose,
well,
and where does the inquiry
proper
go?
Terms there, of reference
yeah,
into
I,
this.
I think there needs to be two bits to an inquiry. Maybe it's the same inquiry, but there needs to be for the people who are there and for the children who of people who were there, there needs to be an explanation of what their records are insofar as it can't be ascertained. So, you know, there's a graveyard in Wexford where all my people are buried. I know the story, right? Most people have that experience. But for these people, there is no story. There is no background. So insofar as records can be got for thousands and thousands of individual people to know a little scrap of information about their own lives and background at that level, I think will be hugely important in human terms. I think separately from that, there needs to be, if you like, and I think this is a big history project, about a holistic writing of the whole story of how this came to pass. And as Alison said, you know, pinning it all on the nuns now is really too little, too late, and it's fairly shameless. And if you look at these nuns, by the way, you know, and you look at how they were used, you know, we had more religious vocations per head of population than almost any other country in Europe. You know, This was a system in which, on the one hand, young women who got pregnant were put into the homes, and on the other hand, young women for whom there were no available husbands were sort of put into religious orders.
But also as a way for poorer families to get an education, because if you gave one Absolutely. To the orders, then, you know, they would then in turn yeah. educate the rest of the family.
Precisely. And of course, these nuns, unlike the male clergy, had incredibly incarcerated lives. You know, nuns were not party girls. They were not even going to the local cinema or walking down the town on their own. That the life of a nun in these orders, while obviously much better than the other young women that they were supervising and care for, that those nuns in themselves were part of a regime that was incredibly enclosed, even though technically they were not enclosed, closed nuns. So their story, interestingly, has not been told. And there were thousands and thousands of them.
I think there's a lot of good that could come out of an inquiry. The names, I don't know if they're in your paper, but they're certainly in the Sunday Independent.
No, they have the full list, the pull-out.
Right, and it makes harrowing reading because you see names, you see dates, and you see causes of death and age. You know, it's not just 1 week, 2 week, 3 week. It's, you know, year and a half. It's little children, as you know.
And there will be people reading those names today, and that will mean, and they'll be very upset.
Of course they will. It's very harrowing. And an inquiry can help. First, it can hopefully provide some recourse, some justice, some dignity to the families, to the infants, to the young children themselves. And there's also a wider narrative here. Like, if you think about all of these scandals, all of these things, we keep looking back into our past and saying the church abuse, and the industrialist schools, and now the tomb babies, and on and on and on. There is a few commonalities between them. One of the commonalities is the religious orders tend to be involved in an awful lot of it. And there's a wider one, which is a deeply ingrained culture in Ireland whereby we put the welfare of the institution, whatever that institution is, ahead of the welfare of the citizen. And we've mm-hmm. been doing it for an awfully long time. And hopefully one thing we can get from this inquiry, but plus inquiries into all of the other things, is that we've got to stop doing that. We missed the Enlightenment in Ireland, you know, when the French philosophers and the English philosophers in the late 1600s and 1700s.
There were a couple of other things going on now. There were.
But you know what? There were a couple of other things going on in other countries too, right? But when the rest of Western Europe was waking up and saying, you know, actually, we've got to start thinking about our society in terms of the citizens and make it citizen-centric societies. In Ireland, none of that came across. We said, no, we've got to think of our society in terms of the institutions, and everything is done in our society to protect and grow the institutions. And I think we are hopefully at a very important point in our evolution as a society, coming up on 100 years as a free state and then a republic, okay. is to say, let's stop for once and for all, let's stop doing that and let's start thinking about our country as a collection of citizens and not a collection of institutions.
Listen, I hate to stop you there, but I have to take a break. I should have taken it ages ago, in fact. So we'll take this break and then stay with us. Come back after the break. Welcome back. Anya Lawler here for Marion. My panel, Leo Varadkar, Alison O'Reilly, Jerry Howland, Stephen Kinsler and Stephen Donnelly, who'll be leaving us shortly. We have about, as I was just explaining to the panel, we don't have Angelus at midday on a Sunday on the radio because you've had Mass earlier, so you don't have Angelus. So I'm not to cue the Angelus in a minute's time. I will be cueing Michael Murphy with the news headlines. Before I do that, Leo Varadkar, you've got 30 seconds to tell us what the inquiry can and will achieve.
You know what will happen. It's going to be a full statute. Commission of Inquiry. It'll be able to hear witnesses. It'll be able to compel witnesses, hold hearings, do site visits, and it will be time limited. And it'll also have the assistance of social historians, which I think is very important in this. The terms of reference will go before the Dáil before the summer recess, so it can be up and running and working over the summer. And it'll inquire into the mother and baby homes. It'll also inquire into the issue of adoptions, some of which were legal, some of which maybe weren't. The vaccine trials as well, which was overlooked by previous governments. And then the whole issue of burials and what happened there. But I think the most important thing now is that we are sensitive about this and, you know, don't jump to conclusions. There's a story in the papers today describing it as the Irish Holocaust. And, you know, the Holocaust was a deliberate attempt by a state to exterminate a whole race of people, and 6 million people were deliberately murdered in the Holocaust. There's no evidence yet that any of these children were deliberately murdered. Some may have died from neglect. or maltreatment. But, you know, I think it's important that we do have a bit more sensitivity about this as well. And the same thing goes for the whole story around the septic tanks. You know, we do know that there weren't 800 skeletons found in a septic tank, if any at all. So it's just important that we all, I think, deal with this on a factual basis and a sensitive basis too.
And with that, at midday, we go to the newsroom and Michael Murphy for the news summary.